Bloomberg News, on demand. Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keane. Friday, February 20th, 2009.
Jim Sinclair, thrilled to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be here.
How long have you been following gold? Give us a get-a-year count you can help us with here.
About the majority of a 50-year career in finance, so let's call it 46 years.
Let's cut to the chase. What is the significance of $1,000 an ounce this 2009?
Ringing a bell. It's a clarion call to something that's transpired. It's a function of a currency when other currencies fail.
When you look at this, and if you extrapolate out, is there a sense here of where gold's going within your newsletter that's read worldwide? I want to avoid here, folks, for the hour, the doom and gloom idea. I want the rational, Jim Sinclair. Is there an econometric pricing that you get to?
Today's pricings are mostly made by what people believe makes price, which is your technical. And technically, gold has three times at the 1,000 level, 1060 right now. 1224, let's call it medium term, and 1650, which is the long-term price objective for gold that I rather hope is not exceeded.
Well, what's going on fundamentally here? Are we seeing fear of inflation or just plain fear?
I'd say the combination of both, with fear first and fear of inflation second. And as any currency fails, whether it happens to be in Poland or wherever, you get a new group of people becoming interested in gold in that country, in that entity holding that unit.
Jim Sinclair, too many ways to take this. Let's first talk about the fundamentals. I hate to say this, Jim, but your choice of economist is suspect. You actually listened to David Rosenberg of Merrill Lynch?
I listen to many people who speak on the subject, so that's not a choice of economists, but it certainly is a voice in the subject.
Well, we have a fond affection for him. He was my first guest on Bloomberg on the economy, so he's in the pantheon here of voices we listen to. Mr. Rosenberg has spoken of disinflation and deflation. Do you buy the idea that we will flip and go to a sense of inflation out a few years?
Rather hope not, because the sense of inflation that develops here is not an economic event; it's a currency event. That's common to a failure of confidence in a currency. Mm-hmm. So the answer is, if there is an inflation coming, that's it, and that's most unwelcome.
Go ahead, please.
Well, we shouldn't assume that gold is an enemy of general equities, because I don't believe that to be true.
Explain that, please.
Well, historically, the investment community in commentary has seen any appreciation in the gold market as to be a basic enemy of the underlying values of equities and therefore, obviously, of business. But right now, when we set or begin to look towards setting at the Federal Reserve an inflationary target, are we not speaking of an entity which, in fact, has resulted in the price of gold today, but which is also an effort to prevent further deterioration or loss of confidence in general business and in general currency?
Jim, let me ask you kind of a background question. You said you've been into gold since the early 60s, right?
46? That's correct. Even before that, sir, yes.
Yeah. Back then, who cared?
It was the yield. It was the utility at that time. Gold companies then had yields between 19 and 22%.
Let's go to that, Jim. You like gold shares versus outright purchase of the bullion. Why is that?
Well, I'm not particularly sure that's true, because if you're looking at owning gold as an insurance item, it's not the share. It's the gold bullion itself. The gold share depends on putting somebody between you and your bullion who you rather hope is a good entrepreneur, a good explorer, or mm-hmm. a good manager.
Well, you know, I look at Phil Verlinger in oil, and his idea of the Prudhoe Bait Royalty Trust is a pure play on oil. What is the preferred Sinclair way to participate within non-bullion markets? Is it a certain gold royalty trust, or is there an angle here?
Your question is personally, and the answer is yes. Personally, my opinion is royalty, because you don't have to raise the money to keep up with ever increasing costs of mining or the management thereof. You end up with what's called a net smelter royalty, or basically whatever percent you negotiate of the actual product itself.
Yeah, is there a name there you like?
Well, I'm CEO of a company that does that, so it's improper for me to recommend myself.
Well, that's fair.
Right now, of course, you have Royal Gold, which I think is a building entity, and Franco-Nevada, which is, of course, the Newmont entity.
Well, interesting. interesting. And Jim Sinclair, I want to jump back here in this first block to the currency markets. The Swedes get a lot of credit for straightening out their mess in the early 90s. As we mentioned, Ken, earlier this week, they did that with an 18% devaluation. Are you predicting an outright jump condition devaluation in the U.S. dollar?
I don't think we can use that word now because when in a floating system, we revaluate and devaluate.
Okay, I missed the pop quiz. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Depreciation. No. Go ahead. No, that's fine. But are you looking for a further depreciation?
Yeah, I don't believe that the present technical flows in the dollar represent the underlying fundamentals of the U.S. economy. And I tend to be a fundamentalist. Therefore, I must say that the dollar is being overvalued by technical flows right now, quite contrary to a recovery and creating a problem for our balance of trade.
Back to gold here, Jim. If gold continues to move up, does it take other commodities with it?
I would say that other commodities will feel an influence, but only on a short covering basis. Commodities are highly fundamental, and you're not going to bring, an edible higher if the crop situations are contrary. So each commodity now has to be analyzed as itself, not within the realm of a wild commodity bull market we experienced before.
These ETFs, there's some Sinclair concerns in the accounting of ETFs. What is that issue right now?
Well, the issue it comes right out of the prospectus, where in some cases it said that very, very clearly that gold as the atomic element 79 gold does not necessarily represent the gold held by the ETF. So when you look at something like that right within a prospectus, and then you take a look at the amount of ETFs that have been created around the world and the amount of gold that they hold, you have to conclude that that was not bought in the physical market because of its tightness. It wasn't bought on an organized exchange because they're transparent reporting, and therefore the possibility of over-the-counter derivatives granting gold from some other source represents a significant part, and that's the whole reason people buy these things is to avoid paper involvement, and guess what? They bought paper.
So, Jim, do you have an ultimate price here for gold?
Yes, and it's one that I've been founded in cement of history of 1650. That's been my goal since 2001.
Jim, I'm looking at a chart of gold adjusted for today's price. You go back to the early 80s, you remember it well. It's a quarterly chart, but you get up to $1,600, $1,700 an ounce. What is different now about this surge in the metal versus what we saw 29 years ago?
29 years ago, we had no credit problems similar to what we have right now. 29 years ago, we had many currencies trading against each other, offering other vehicles for hedging concerns. We didn't have, in that period of time, the enormous trading activities of hedge funds, who now have turned predatory, as if one shark eating another. Now we've got a group, but very few fat sharks, that can only find residence within the currency markets. Back then, we didn't have all of our relatives and even our grandmother in the attic with their computer trading on their internet systems. It's an entirely different world, which tends to multiply circumstances in terms of price.
And things happen faster?
Instantaneously, because we're awash in a sea of information, and the entire world is at a fingertip.
You mentioned that other commodities going up with gold only on short covering. What about oil?
Well, oil is there's a fundamental consideration which might, in fact, and I do believe, would create a floor in oil, and that's the fact that we have already peaked in production, and believe it or not, there is a tomorrow, and there is a place called Asia. Putting that all together and looking at the markets, that $30 level seems to be reflecting the peak in production.
Jim Sinclair, I'm looking at Encima Global. David Malpass, former chief economist, Bear Stearns. In the meantime, and this is from David Malpass, we think several more asset classes may collapse as deflation spreads. Art, antiques, show horses, high-end vacation homes, gold, and unfortunately, wages. Look at the other side, and is there a question you have where you say, hey, we may get a deflation that will pull gold down, or does gold go up because of the deflation?
You have to consider that David has never really been too interested in gold, And Bear Stearns has not had the sterling record of performance. No offense, David, but it's a fact. Gold is not a commodity, David. Gold is a currency. Readjust your thinking.
Okay. George Akerlof, the Nobel laureate, Robert Shiller of Yale University, they're out with a book now, Jim Sinclair, called Animal Spirits. It's about economic confidence and the need for it in trying times. Link gold in here. I mean, it's an ancient idea. How do you treat gold when you look at the confidence within an economic system?
I look at the confidence as it's measured by currencies more than I do by general securities markets. Not that, of course, general equities fit within that equation, but the final denominator before it moves to gold is currencies. And confidence is the key to everything. Confidence in a fractional reserve system is why a dollar functions. Confidence in general equities is what's missing today. As confidence breaks down all in various areas around the world, the motivation is to go to something which has historically maintained value to which there's no liability attached.
When did that start with gold?
Gold functioned beautifully at $258 an ounce in a 21-year bull market in the dollar and in general currencies of major manufacturing countries.
Go back to the gold standard, 1880. Go back to the Austrian economics and before that. When did this affinity with gold begin? Do we suggest it's biblical?
I came, I saw, I conquered. It's before the Roman Republic. And that exists in the subjective mind of people. But the period of the ability to use gold in a system or to have any kind of gold convertibility is at a time when world trade was minuscule compared to now.
Well,
in that sense, it is a relic.
I want to link it into Barry Eichengreen of Berkeley in his classic book, Golden Fetters. And when you look at gold now and the testing of this global economic system, are you suggesting we go back to some form of amended gold standard, some modern gold standard?
Well, you hear the word Bretton Woods being brought up again more often than we would have expected it, certainly.
Yeah.
Still more often than even 2 years ago. The function of the of going to all of these floating items of currency, et cetera, is to remove the alarm system from a body economic. And a body economic without an alarm system is akin to the human disease of not being able to feel pain. The person who might put their hand, unfortunately, on a stove and not even know what was happening. The way bond markets move, the way currencies move today, would have at one time been called a crisis, and today is called a change, the change on the day. There is a strong possibility, I think, as long as Chairman Volcker is involved, that if circumstances were to resolve themselves to where prior Chairman Volcker's suggestion of the reimplementation of policies which brought deficits towards, not back to, towards surpluses, something else could occur, and that would be a modernized and revitalized Federal Reserve gold certificate ratio, not tied to interest rates as it was before, but rather tied to a measure of international liquidity that at the time of adoption would be considered to be either zero or 100.
Sounds like an IMF function.
Jim, last year we saw all commodities pretty much move up in lockstep through July, and then they all went down. And one of the explanations we got for that was you had investors who had never been in commodities before, some hedge funds, university endowments, pension funds. Are they out for good now, or are they going to come back
in? I think the main players are out for good, meaning that they're non-functional anymore. That drop came right back to its original breakout, which is probably one of the largest fishing lines anybody's ever seen in chart analysis. Now you get back to commodities being what they are, which is industrial use and public consumption. And in many cases, just as they went wildly above what the cost of production is or the cost of planting, now they fell the other side. And the one thing about the commodity market is it never goes to zero. Once a commodity declines below the cost of producing it, it will either just languish at that level up and down a bit or make a recovery if the decline is significantly below it. And that's the game you're playing with oil right now, or we're all trying to figure out.
Okay, so oil is below the cost of production, so it's going to stay there.
Well, once something gets down below the cost of production, the impetus to produce it is reduced, and therefore you look at your global demand and destruction and see whether, in fact, that's been overstated as it applies to other areas in the world, such as Asia.
Speaking of oil here, Tom, we have NYMEX crude at $37.38 is down $2.10, down 5.3%, pairing its biggest gain in 7 weeks as global stock markets go down.
And S&P down 1.73%, Dow down 1.70%, 127 points. So that separation, that differential, isn't quite like it was earlier in the week. That suggests it's sort of all boats sinking versus a financial-led system. I'll tell you, Jim Sinclair, this is fun. What are you writing about this week? What's the message?
The opposite. As as you quite correctly pointed out, that it's a field situation now, entirely moving into an emotional catharsis.
But we're not there. You have not.
In 1930, we had a very significant rally.
Oh, okay.
And if I might speculate, the minute we get the uptick rule back again, and pools can't plow into any bid that exists, you might get a 1930 rally of substance. Let's say before March.
I featured the Republic of Austria credit default swap on television earlier this week. John Tucker threw a shoe at me when I did that, but it looks like a Saturn V rocket. I mean, this is not going to happen in New York per se. When you look at the instabilities in market metrics in Europe, what does that signal to you?
Well, the bottom line is, what is the debt situation versus the GDP? And markets tend to exaggerate everything, but the truth is we're all in trouble. And it's only a question of figuring out who's in most trouble. Now, the euro would strengthen itself by doing a great body shake and getting rid of all those weak nations that it acquired. We're going into some very significant changes now. But let me suggest to you, how in the world does any entity granting a default derivative swap hedge itself in Austria? Are they short the Austrian bonds? Answer: there's more trouble in the indicator than there is in Austria.
Jim, I think we're going to leave it there. The tape is so nuts, we're unfortunately have to go.
It's perfectly okay. Ask me a question, I'll tell you the truth.
Okay, thank you. We'll leave it there. Thanks. Jim Sinclair with us on this historic day as gold touches $1,000.
There's more television and radio news at Bloomberg.com. Stream it live. Download it to your iPod or desktop. Copyright Bloomberg LP 2009.